Good evening. The stock market takes a nosedive. Mayor de Blasio speaks on the virus and more news for Thursday, March 5th, 2020. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Turkish President Recep Erdogan and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin have announced a ceasefire in Idlib to begin at midnight on Thursday after a meeting in Moscow that lasted 6 hours. Idlib, the last rebel stronghold in Syria, has witnessed increased violence and bloodshed since last December, the start of a fresh Russia-backed Syrian offensive to regain control over the region, resulting in Turkey sending thousands of troops into the province to repel the Syrian army. And Benjamin Netanyahu has claimed a general election victory, but it's not yet in the bag. He's been fighting to stay on as Israel's prime minister for a record fifth term. That's after two previous general elections failed to produce a clear winner, and Netanyahu and his main rival, Benny Gantz, couldn't form a government. Now his chances of staying in power have been unexpectedly boosted. After the third election in less than a year, exit polls show he has a significant lead. Another potential first for Netanyahu, he could end up as the first Israeli leader to hold office while also being tried for corruption. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo condemned a decision by the International Criminal Court to authorize an investigation into alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Afghanistan by U.S. armed forces, the CIA, and the Taliban. Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda sought authorization in November 2017 to open an investigation into crimes connected to the conflict in Afghanistan. On Thursday, the ICC Appeals Chamber ruled unanimously in favor of allowing the investigation.
The prosecutor is authorized to commence investigation in relation to alleged crimes committed on the territory of Afghanistan in the period since 1st May 2003, as well as other alleged crimes that have a nexus to the armed conflict in Afghanistan and are sufficiently linked to the situation and were committed on the territory of other state parties in the period since 1st July 2002.
The American Civil Liberties Union praised the ICC decision to authorize the investigation. The New York-based Center for Constitutional Rights represented several detainees held by the United States in the proceeding. But Secretary of State Pompeo said the U.S. would deny visas to anyone involved in the investigation by the ICC. He also threatened possible economic sanctions.
Since 1998, the United States has declined to join the ICC because of its broad, unaccountable prosecutorial powers and the threat it poses to American national sovereignty. We are determined to protect the American and allied military and civilian personnel from living in fear of unjust prosecution for actions taken to defend our great nation. Thus, today, persistent to existing legal authority to impose visa restrictions on any alien, quote, whose entry or proposed activities in the United States would have potentially serious adverse foreign policy consequences, end of quote.
Pompeo accused the International Criminal Court of being under the influence of misinformation. The ICC says it has a reasonable basis to believe crimes that fall under its jurisdiction occurred in Afghanistan. The investigation opens up U.S. armed forces and American personnel operating in the region over the nearly two-decade war to charges. The U.S. is not a party to the ICC, and the Trump administration has taken a hard line against it for efforts to investigate American service members. In March of last year, the State Department accused the body of acting in political interests over independent justice. Sanctions were then leveled at members of the court. And more deaths were reported on Thursday in Italy, the Netherlands, France, and the United Kingdom. Several public events have been canceled, and all schools in Italy are closed for at least 10 days. In the United States, the number of people who have the novel coronavirus in New York State doubled to 22 on Thursday, following an increase in testing, as Tennessee and the city of San Francisco reported cases of the fast-spreading illness for the first time. The United States Senate on Thursday passed an $8.3 billion bill to combat the outbreak, 96-1. A day after the House of Representatives overwhelmingly approved it. The bill will now go to the President, Donald Trump, for his signature. Meanwhile, in New York, Mayor Bill de Blasio told a news conference about new cases in the city. A man in his 40s, a woman in her 80s, who were critically ill and being treated in hospitals. Both, he said, had substantial pre-existing conditions. The mayor asked the federal government to bring on more help.
With the previous briefing as possible. And as I said, I think we are going to be doing a lot of these. So let me start with, yesterday we talked in detail about the family from Westchester and the law firm Lewis and Garboz. where both the mother and father of that family worked. In addition to the mother and father, eight other individuals at the law firm, seven employees, one intern, four residents of New York City, four residents of areas outside New York City, all have been tested. Here is what we know so far. For the four New York City residents, the tests have all come back negative. For the one resident beyond the couple themselves from Westchester County, the test has come back negative. We have three more tests pending. We will have those results today, and we'll publish them as soon as we have them. And everything's very dynamic, as everyone is seeing, so these numbers can move at any given moment. But as of this moment, I've got, obviously, we'll talk about the four confirmed cases, the four cases that tested positive. But now the number of negative cases is 26. We have 26 tests completed, come back negative. We have two new cases confirmed this morning in New York City, a man in his 40s, a woman in her 80s. Both are critically ill at this moment. Both did have substantial pre-existing conditions. In the case of the man, respiratory issues related to smoking and vaping. In the case of the woman, specific illnesses related to her advanced age. One is at a hospital in Brooklyn, one is at a hospital in Manhattan. Again, we're going to try always to define what we are able to tell you, what we're not yet able to tell you. Obviously, there's a confidentiality issue here that we have to be sensitive to. These are voluntary hospitals, not public hospitals. Okay, now this gets into the issue of community spread, which we're very, very concerned about, obviously, and this is kind of defining changing reality. So today we're going to be talking about some strategic differences, even compared to yesterday, now that we have more evidence of community spread. So in the case of these two individuals, neither one had a connection to the areas affected in other parts of the world. So there's no travel nexus. Neither one connected to any of the other cases we've seen. Our disease detectives are working with their families right away on mapping their contacts, and we'll have more to say on that shortly, and we'll obviously be following up with any close contacts.
And that's the mayor speaking today. Tennessee, by the way, became the 14th state to report a case. The U.S. death toll from the COVID-19 or coronavirus, or novel coronavirus, as it's been called, respiratory disease, stands at 11, but all but one of them in Washington State, which has a cluster of at least 39 infections in the Seattle area. The other death announced on Wednesday was in California. The cost of the coronavirus outbreak is mounting everywhere. Air travel is being impacted in particular. The German carrier Lufthansa has grounded hundreds of planes, and a British regional carrier declared bankruptcy today, and the possibility of more failures looms. Airlines have been waiving change fees for new bookings and in some cases cutting fares in an effort to entice travelers on board. The measures have accelerated the drop in airline stocks, which have fallen more than the broader market. Stocks on the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged nearly 1,000 points Thursday, erasing most of the steep gains in the previous session as markets remained highly volatile in the face of the fast-spreading coronavirus. The Dow posted its second biggest point gain on Wednesday as major wins from former President Joe Biden during Super Tuesday sparked a relief rally, especially in the healthcare sector. On Tuesday, the Federal Reserve cut its benchmark interest rate unexpectedly by 50 basis points, citing that coronavirus poses evolving risks to economic activity. It was the central bank's first such emergency cut since the 2008 financial crisis. Meanwhile, Trump was on Sean Hannity's Fox News program last night. He began by blaming the Obama administration for the virus outbreak.
Just say that it's, you know, a very, very small number in this country. And we're going to try and keep it that way as much as possible. I will say, though, the H1N1, that was swine flu, commonly referred to as swine flu. And that went from around April of 09 to April of 10, where there were 60 million cases of swine flu. And you had over 13,000. I think you might have said 17. I had heard it was 13, but a lot of deaths. and they didn't do anything about it. Interestingly, with the swine flu, children were, in particular, they were vulnerable, sort of the opposite in that respect, but children were very vulnerable to the swine flu. But they never did close the borders. I don't think they ever did have the travel ban, and we did. And, again, they lost at least 13,000. It could be as high as 17,000 people. And they reacted much differently. And then, you know, I watch Biden try and criticize us, but I'm not sure he knows what he's criticizing, to be honest with you. But I watched him the other day try, or I watched Schumer. Every time they put a mic in his face, he has no idea the incredible job these people are doing. He'll say, oh, they're doing a horrible job, horrible job. Well, he says that because that's like the order, you know, he'll say it about anything.
Trump went on to contradict the World Health Organization, which has said the fatality rate from the coronavirus is at 3.5% worldwide. Trump said he thought the number was less than 1%.
Well, I think the 3.4% is really a false number. Now, this is just my hunch, and but based on a lot of conversations with a lot of people that do this, because a lot of people will have this, and it's very mild. They'll get better very rapidly. They don't even see a doctor. They don't even call a doctor. You never hear about those people. So you can't put them down in the category of the overall population in terms of this corona flu and or virus. So you just can't do that. So if, you know, we have thousands or hundreds of thousands of people that get better just by, you know, sitting around and even going to work, some of them go to work, but they get better. And then when you do have a death like you've had in the state of Washington, like you had one in California, I believe you had one in New York, you know, all of a sudden it seems like 3 or 4%, which is a very high number, as opposed to a fraction of 1%. But again, they don't know about the easy cases, because the easy cases don't go to the hospital. They don't report to doctors or the hospital in many cases. So I think that that number is very high. I think the number, personally, I would say the number is way under 1%.
And at a news conference, famed immunologist Dr. Anthony Fauci was asked if he was being pressured by Trump.
I don't think I'm being countermanded by the.
The president said last night that people who were had the mild disease could essentially go to work. He suggested that. Who had mild symptoms.
Well, I had not heard that. I can't comment.
I hadn't heard that either.
The WHO number of 3.5 is wrong. He thinks that it's not the case. Is WHO wrong? Is there a number?
I do think Admiral Giroir just walked you through the different, the disparity. Well, no, that's actually based on international data.
It is.
So has WHO been wrong? It's 3.5 and now it's down to
It's how one describes.
So our best modeling.
And the chair of the emergency department of Staten Island University Hospital is Dr. Nicole Berwald. She says while coronavirus is serious, there's no need to panic.
The majority of people who get this virus are likely not to get very sick from it. That's the information that we have currently. And the best information we have coming out of the CDC and the Department of Health. But I think we should be prepared for more and more people to get the virus. And with that, be armed with the things that we do that keep us from getting other people sick when you are that person who gets sick. So namely, good hand hygiene, staying at home from work and school. When you do have a cough associated with it, covering your cough, covering your sneeze. When you live with people, not sharing towels, not drinking out of the same glass, to keep some distance between yourself if possible.
How do they know they have it, and how should they respond to the fear?
Liken it to the flu, right? During flu season, there are plenty of people who are home and say, oh, I just know I have the flu, right? I have all the symptoms. I've been in contact with three people who have the flu. I must have the flu too. And that's actually not a bad rationale about these kind of uncontagious viruses. The reality is some people will be tested for this and some people will not be, and they will still have it. It's one of those things where when you know these kind of viruses are in your community, there's a good chance when you feel sick with the similar symptoms that you have it. And I'll say it's my opinion and that of the CDC and the Department of Health and all of the sort of the advisors on this currently, that not everyone will need to be tested. If you have mild symptoms, You're being advised to stay at home, not be in contact with other people. You can contact your physician's office. If you're feeling very sick, obviously you need to go to a hospital. We want to care for every patient who needs care. But someone with mild symptoms, You could assume it's this virus or another, but in reality, you'd be doing the same things for yourself, be it this virus, the influenza virus, or many other seasonal viruses.
And how would you see this playing out? I know nobody has a crystal ball, but how far will it go? And it does have a significantly higher death incidence. Are we going to see an increase in deaths like they saw in Seattle?
So it's really hard to predict what the mortality rate associated with this virus is, because it is my impression, and from the things we've been seeing, that the true denominator, meaning the true number of people who have had this infection in some capacity, really we can't account for them. We're accounting for people by the number of people that we've tested. And currently, given our ability to test and the rigorous nature that's being used to determine who will be tested, many more people are being tested if they are on the sicker end of the spectrum. The actual mortality rate is a difficult one to know or to predict. When I think about what happened in Washington State, it's interesting. A large number of the deaths there happened in a confined space, in a place where we're going to assume that the patients are older and potentially with some comorbid illnesses, which are those patients that we see doing worse with this virus nationally and internationally. Look back at China. So we started to learn about this from them early in February, right? We don't know really when patient zero was. It definitely predates when we started hearing about it. And now a month has passed, and we start to see that their peak has turned down, right? The curve of patients who've been getting it has turned down. And I think we would expect the same thing, that it'll rise up slowly. You'll get your maximum infected rate, and then it will fall back down, like we see with influenza, like they saw in Wuhan.
Who is most at risk?
It appears to be patients who are older or who have some comorbid illnesses, specifically pulmonary issues, seem to be the patients who are being most affected. But that is not really that well understood at this point, that if someone feels significantly ill, they should seek medical attention. That was what we saw out of the other countries who've seen this disease so far. It's really important to remember what your resources are for people in New York, your listeners. Reach out to your local Department of Health if you have questions. The Department of Health, I have been notified, will be having testing centers. You don't always want to go somewhere where you can infect other people if you're sick, and some of those centers would be a good place to go if that was your big concern.
Is there anything besides washing hands people can do to help themselves?
Washing your hands, warm water, a good amount of time, around 30 seconds. Hand sanitizers are fine as well. And to do it frequently, that's probably one of the best things you can do. And keeping yourself away from people who are sick. For a lot of people, that means not going to work, keeping kids home from school, potentially coming up with alternate child care if they have to, because we might see schools or other things closing. That's not the worst thing to plan for. But really trying to confine it the best way that you can.
The worst things we can expect, I mean, could we expect people being forced to stay in their homes and things like that? I mean, where could this go?
If it becomes something where it's really sort of pervasive in our communities, the staying home becomes a little less effective. The idea of staying home is to prevent the spread. Currently, we're guiding people, if they have been in contact with someone, if they're known sick, to stay isolated. But I think you come to a line, and that hasn't yet been determined. And if it were to get widespread enough where that becomes a little less efficacious, and the recommendations would likely change.
And Dr. Nicole Burwald is chair of the Emergency Department of Staten Island University Hospital. I'll be hosting a special program, and she'll be one of our guests tomorrow at noon on WBAI on the coronavirus. We hope you'll join us tomorrow again, Friday at noon. And New York Attorney General Letitia James today issued guidance to New Yorkers highlighting available resources and potential consumer scams related to the coronavirus disease, known as COVID-19. With several cases confirmed in New York, it is critical that New Yorkers, this is what the Letitia James said, are aware of their rights and the resources available to help them during this time. The Office of the Attorney General is actively monitoring retailers for potential incidents of price gouging or of necessary goods and entities selling bogus medical treatments that purport to effectively treat or cure COVID-19 or the coronavirus. This week, Attorney General James issued a cease and desist order to an entity that is marketing a product as a treatment for the coronavirus, even though there is currently no FDA-approved vaccine to prevent the disease or treatment to cure it. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren dropped out of the Democratic presidential race today, unable to build a broad coalition of voters after writing her policy proposals and sweeping calls for big structural change to the top of the presidential field last year. Linda Perry has the story.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren stepped out of her home with her husband, Bruce Mann, and their golden retriever, Bailey. She spoke to reporters from her driveway in Cambridge, Massachusetts, following the announcement she made this morning that she's suspending her candidacy.
You know, this has been the honor of a lifetime. 10 years ago, I was teaching a few blocks from here and talking about what was broken in America and ideas for how to fix it. And pretty much nobody wanted to hear it. And I've had a chance to get out there and talk with millions of people. And, you know, we have ideas now that we talk about that we just weren't talking about even a year ago. A 2-cent wealth tax and universal child care that could be real. We could make it happen. And canceling student loan debt for 43 million Americans and raising Social Security payments. Those are life-changing events for people. And we can actually do this.
Warren, who loves speaking with young students excited about her candidacy, was asked what message she can give to women and girls who were hoping for a woman president, but instead get two white men candidates.
One of the hardest parts of this is all those pinky promises and all those little girls who are going to have to wait 4 more years. That's going to be hard.
Warren received 65 delegates in primary elections, but won no states on Super Tuesday. She talked with both Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders and says she isn't endorsing either today, that she wants to take a little time around this and is assessing who would be best to uphold her agenda. Warren attempted to widen the field, but she says the narrowing is what is most disappointing.
You know, I was told at the beginning of this whole undertaking that there are two lanes, a progressive lane that Bernie Sanders is the incumbent for and a moderate lane that Joe Biden is the incumbent for. And there's no room for anyone else in this. I thought that wasn't right, but evidently I was wrong.
While Elizabeth Warren didn't win her home state, finishing third behind Biden and Sanders, she says she loves her home state of Massachusetts and appreciates all the people who voted for her through the years.
I am deeply grateful to the people of Massachusetts. Look, back in 2012, they took a chance on someone who had never run for public office before. They ousted a very popular incumbent Republican senator to give me a chance to stand up on a bigger platform and fight for their families. And I am deeply grateful for that. They returned me to the Senate in 2018, and I'm deeply grateful for that. They're the reason I'm in this fight, and they're the reason I am able to stand here today.
Warren says she'll have much to say about the role of gender in the race in the future.
Gender in this race, you know, that is the trap question for every woman. If you say, yeah, there was sexism in this race, everyone says, whiner. And if you say, no, there was no sexism, about a bazillion women think, what planet do you live on?
The Boston Globe writes the campaign's beating heart was Warren herself, who used her up from the bootstrap personal story and unyielding willingness to meet personally with voters to try to connect with an electorate that could never shake its doubts about whether she could win. Warren will surely be remembered for taking down billionaire Mike Bloomberg and basically forcing him out of the race, but also for her attacks on Wall Street. Eyes are now on where her supporters will swing. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
And finally, the Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation into potential misconduct by guards as officials keep inmates locked down at the federal jail in New York, where financier Jeffrey Epstein killed himself over the summer. Three people familiar with the matter told the Associated Press. The investigation at the Metropolitan Correctional Center is focusing on the flow of contraband into one of the most secure jails in America and is being led by federal prosecutors from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan. They were not authorized to discuss the investigation publicly and spoke on conditions of anonymity. The criminal investigation comes as inmates have remained locked in their cells without access to their lawyers a week after authorities began searching cells in search of a possible gun that so far they've been unable to find. The investigation started after jail officials received information that a gun may have been smuggled into the Manhattan lockup. Since then, officials have canceled all visitation at the jail, which houses about 700 inmates. There are no signs of the lockdown ending anytime soon. The lockdown is just the latest crisis at the jail, where Epstein died by suicide in August. Federal prosecutors allege that the two correctional officers assigned to watch Epstein's unit were snoozing and shopping on the internet and later forged records to make it look like they checked in on him. And that's some of the news for Thursday, March 5th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. And we'll see you tomorrow at noon for our special on the coronavirus.